Well, we are continuing our coverage of what really happened on 9/11 and the massive cover-up therein. Joining me now is Aidan Monahan. He's an electrical engineer, author of the book Declassifying 9/11. He's been studying 9/11 since around the year 2006 with a particular focus on how the airplanes were flown on that day and has led the way in researching technology that may have been used to fly those aircraft remotely. Aidan, welcome to the show.
Clayton, thank you for having me.
Why were you drawn to this part of the story? There's any number of pieces of this story, whether it's the Pentagon piece of the story, Flight 93, Building 7, the demolition of the buildings. What drew you to the airplanes themselves and the remote controlling of these airplanes?
Around 2006, 2005, I began to realize that the World Trade Center building destructions were probably the result of sabotage. It was at that time I also concluded that, therefore, the planes themselves, the attacks by the planes, were by some means that were not reported by the media or federal authorities. And I undertook a effort to find out if there were ways of delivering the airplanes to the targets they met that day by means other than the accused amateur pilots and hijackers themselves.
So talk about the aircraft themselves. Now, you have really drilled in on the idea of the remote control as an engineer. Talk about what you started to uncover regarding the aircraft and in the remote controlling of these aircraft.
In the several years leading up to 9/11, I began to realize that during that time, there was intensive research and development for sort of, as we refer to them, future function aviation technology, relying heavily on GPS compatible avionics packages for aircraft. And I began to realize that during this 5 year or so period, there was intensive R&D underway, relying on Boeing 757, 767 aircraft leased from different entities such as UPS, FedEx, airlines like United, for example, and testing and developing this technology. And coincidentally or not, the planes used in the attacks, for example, were also Boeing 757, 767 planes. And what wound up being the case is the accomplishment of GPS accuracy provided 3 meters left, right, up, and down into these virtual highways in the sky, shall we say. Highly reliable, highly accurate, and it was only available on a R&D basis around 2001. They didn't become formalized for commercial use by the airlines until 2003, once the FAA certified these things. But these systems and capabilities were essentially laying dormant within these aircraft, within the sky above us. The newly activated GPS signal that had only been turned on during May of 2000, about a year and a half prior to the 9/11 attacks themselves.
So this GPS signal was just flipped on these aircraft, but we're led to believe it wasn't being used. Can you explain how that's shocking to me? I didn't know anything about that.
Yes, the built into the GPS servers for many years were deliberately installed errors to deter foreign enemy abuse. And in May of 2000, the Defense Secretary Cohen under Clinton activated, per his order, the service that eliminated those errors and included the newly augmented capabilities. Wide area augmentation system, long story short, refers to a ground-based, aspect of the network added to the service. It's a long story, a little difficult to summarize, but in that case, in any event, these avionics packages were scheduled for installation during 98 and 99, according to the airlines, that supported these functions, which were not being used for commercial use, as I said, until about 2003. So for a period of about 4 or 5 years, from 98 to about 2003, these capabilities were available technically although not officially. So essentially, they were dormant aboard these planes for about 4 or 5 years.
And what does this technology allow people to do? Is that the remote controlled access point, or what is exactly is that doing, that GPS technology?
The remote aspect of the bigger picture refers to the capability of airlines and other entities with the technical capability of transmitting entire flight plan waypoints and data remotely via radio frequency, which can automatically self-install into the flight management systems of these planes. So technically speaking, that would be referred to or viewed as a remote capability.
So remote capability to be able to control these aircraft. And I didn't realize, so three, you said, you described as 3 meters up and down and left and right. That's the precision with which that technology was laying dormant in these aircraft. Like, we had that technology, it was laying dormant inside of these aircraft and we didn't know about it?
Well, certainly the industry knew, the professionals knew, the capabilities were there in anticipation of the eventual official use starting in 03. So these were brand new avionics packages in anticipation of this service and these capabilities and the desire to use them for commercial purposes.
Okay, so let's talk about this technology and who might have had access to this. When you started peeling this onion back, what did you find in terms of who could have put this here, who might have had a motive to control these aircraft? Take us through that part of the story now.
Well, there's one character in particular, Dov Zakheim of the Bush White House, a known neoconservative who led a company called System Planning Corporation, which developed a platform by which unmanned or unpiloted, according to their reports, aerial vehicles could be interfaced through their flight control systems in order to turn various aerial vehicles around, for example, should the need arise or desire arise, and return these flying vehicles, pilotless vehicles, to a base of their choice, a runway of their choice, for example. There are other broader aspects of the technology, but that particular aspect of this interface certainly caught my attention and some others as well.
So bring me to 9/11 then. And so what do you think happened on that day with these aircraft?
There's one video in particular of United 175, the one that everyone saw on television at 9:02, I believe, that morning. And about 30 videos, there's one in particular that allows the viewer to see the plane flying toward the camera from some miles distant for about a mile and a half, for about 5 to 8 seconds. I have to double check my numbers there, but it's that one video that allows us to observe the bank angle utilized. We know already, thanks to government reports, what the ground speeds were, crosswind speeds, therefore air speeds. And from these foundational numbers, we can therefore branch off into other calculations, relying on trigonometry and so on. And as a result, we can see that this plane was essentially, long story short, and I spelled this out in some papers I published, the plane was on target about 1.5 to 6 miles from the target while traveling at about 800 feet per second. And what's telling, a telling takeaway from all that is that if what we see on video occurs 1 second sooner or later than observed, the initiation of the bank angle, the start time, etc., the plane necessarily misses the building by 800 feet while traveling at 800 feet per second, which seems to be beyond even a competent human pilot's control, much less the accused amateurs.
Right. So, okay, let me just unpack that a little bit. This video that we're seeing here, this 1.5 mile turn, is so precise that even advanced pilots who have been flying for 30 years or more say that they wouldn't be able to pull off this maneuver? And that, so in your estimation, your expertise, it could have only been performed with this precision at this descent on the human body by remote control. Like no pilot could have really pulled this off. Is that what you're saying?
I've heard professionals refer to it as very challenging to say the least. What you see in the video is a plane in a 10,000 foot descent per minute, wings level. It then goes behind smoke, reappears. By this time, it's banked at a 20 degree angle. About 2.5 seconds before impact, it rotates another 18 degrees to 38 degrees. But using trigonometry, I've been able to show that that final 18 degree twist at the end was not necessary to achieve impact. And so what we're looking at is something comparable to a half court shot in basketball.
And so what would have accounted for that last second 18 degree turn? Why would that have been performed? What was the purpose of that?
Yeah, that's a question that had been on my mind until I concluded myself, and this is just my personal opinion, that it did create an impression for the observer of reckless, imperfect human pilot control. It was noted in the media by some reporters that the plane appeared to be desperately trying to achieve impact via a desperate last second bank. But using trigonometry, that the plane would have hit the building regardless of the final 18 degree rotation.
So it was done for show, basically, in order to further the propaganda that this was a pilot in a fight with a box cutter fighting to bank this plane into the towers.
Yes, as so many things are lately, it may very well have been just for appearance sake and to increase an impression of plausibility for the official account.
Let's take a look at some of these images that also you've sent over. What are we seeing here? Let's take through. So I guess this is a still image here of one of the towers being, you know, one of the other tower being on fire. What are we seeing here in this black and white image?
That is a composite of one of the frames, actually two of the frames from the video I described. And I just provide that for your reference and any of the viewers themselves. As I mentioned, we see a plane at wings level, rapid 10,000 foot per minute descent. It goes behind smoke, reappears at a 20 degree bank angle, and then maintains that very steadily all the way into the target until the last 2.5 seconds, at which time it then rotates another 18 degrees at impact for a 38 degree impact angle.
Now take me through this sort of wind tunnel image here. What is this?
That, I believe, is a Boeing industry illustration of what was hoped to be representative of these virtual highways in the sky, which was the objective in the late 90s, to replace these legacy navigational aids such as VOR, DME, INS as well, or not INS, but ILS, correction. And the industry was planning to phase these out pretty rapidly with the appearance of this new technology. So that's basically what you're looking at. It's for the general viewer, an illustration by the industry. I think it was Boeing specifically who put that together.
And is the idea that we would go pilotless for UPS, FedEx flights, that these would all be loaded up with packages and pilots wouldn't have to be involved in this process any longer?
Eventually, I think that is a goal, although there are some hurdles and obstacles in the way of that. But what most people don't realize is even on their typical coast-to-coast four-hour flight from New York or Boston to LA, for example, the pilot is actually only hand-controlling the plane for about 3 minutes, 90 at takeoff, 90 seconds at landing. And the rest of the time, the airplane is on autopilot itself. It's actually a more stable option for flight than, shall we say, a human pilot control of the plane, a plane.
And in your evidence, it appears, and we've covered this on the show as well, that there appears to be no way, or virtually impossible, if not impossible, for these pilots, these alleged hijackers, to have had any kind of control maneuvering this type of aircraft with that type of descent, with those types of maneuvers, with that precision, when these pilots were inexperienced at best, had very little time, if any, in a simulator. Is that what your evidence has also uncovered?
It seems to have, yes. For example, Flight 175, while descending at 10,000 feet per minute at the very end, radar returns infer that there was a last second increase in speed, which requires the right hand or left hand to control the thrust lever control of the aircraft, while with the other hand maintaining steering with the control stick with the other free hand, all while dealing with what were probably very high G forces as the plane leveled out from its 10,000 foot per minute rapid descent into the building. It seems like a challenge even for a professional, much less an accused amateur.
Right. I've spoken to Marine Corps pilots who say, no, we wouldn't be able to do that. Marine Corps pilots, you know, this, okay. You can't pull that off, then how is a hijacker with almost no flight experience able to pull that off? It's remarkable, really. This other image here that I want to look at on your screen that you sent as well, this open plan office with the express elevators and the wingspan here. What are we looking at here, and why is this important?
That is a composite I created of the dimensions of the items of interest in this whole scenario. The building, the plane, and the virtual highway in the sky referred to earlier. The highest degree of accuracy was referred to as RNP.02. It's a nautical mile measure. And the highest degree of accuracy around 2002, 2003, according to the publication, achieved for this system was 0.02 nautical miles, which is 100 and 23 feet, which is a radial measure for a total diameter of 243 feet, 123 left, 123 right, up and down, for a total of 243. Sorry for all the math, but that's the nautical mile measure for accuracy. And what you see in the image, the composite, of course, is the nice fit of the building, of the airplane, into this virtual highway in the sky. And technically, and it just establishes the plausibility of this suspicion of mine and others for some other means of control other than the accused.
On a scale of 1 to 100, Aiden, 100 being, you know, 100% likely that these were remote controlled, where do you come down on this after all this years of research and evidence? 100%, 80%, 50%? Where do you come down on this?
Probably close to 100. There's such a precision involved, at least in the flight of 175. As well, what I forgot to mention was this new technology, this GPS technology, supported ascending and descending turns within these virtual highways in the sky, these tiny little quarters, relatively speaking. The legacy nav aids like VOR, DME, simply did not support these capabilities for many difficult to explain reasons. But the GPS did. It was reported by a Stanford publication in 1998. And this is what you see in the case of the Pentagon flight, a 270 degree descending turn. With 175, you see the same thing, a descending turn. And as well, even Flight 11 apparently was also via a descending turn. It was banked at about I forgot the exact number of degrees at impact, but it was also descending and banking. So therefore, you have three, at least, of the four planes hitting targets via this very means described in Stanford publications around 1998.
An incredibly difficult maneuver to pull off, even for advanced pilots, to do a descending turn like this, facing G-forces, controlling both levers, both the thrust and the steering column as well, trying to maneuver this plane. Yeah, It doesn't add up at all. I'll get you out of here on this, Aiden. When we talked earlier about under the Clinton administration, but who do you think, what organizations would have had sort of a control center, a booth somewhere that maybe had the capabilities to be controlling these craft? Do we know beyond what you sort of mentioned a little bit at the beginning, but was there any sort of organization that your evidence has led you in finger pointing that they were probably the ones responsible for controlling these craft, or do we not know that?
I referred earlier to Dobbs Atcom, a neoconservative PNAC signatory, running a company that ran, or rather developed a platform by which 9/11 itself could have very well been pulled off, so to speak. Apparently, according to one publication, this platform could support up to 5 aircraft or more, which is what you had on 9/11. You had 4. And so that system is highly suspect, especially given the parties involved, other organizations, the Department of Defense, certainly, perhaps some entities within the airline system itself, certainly the White House. That's where your command and control stops and starts.
My guest has been Aiden Monahan. His book is called Declassifying 9/11. He's been studying 9/11 since around 2006. And all of this remote control technology, it's fascinating. And thank you for shedding light on this. We've really been doing a deep dive on this part of the story. And I'm thrilled that you're able to provide even more context here in things that we haven't discussed yet on our show. So thank you for bringing a whole level of detailed analysis that we haven't yet featured here on the show. Thank you so much, Aiden. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, and thank you, Clayton.